Chapter 29. There must be 50 Slakies at least, Angelina said, curling her lips in disgust. All of them equally repulsive. Press the button, Professor, and set off the bomb. We will all sleep better at night. The three of us sat staring into the permanent screen set up to monitor Slakey. Koipu looked very unhappy as he shook his head no.
Too risky. All he needs is one of him out there on one of the thousands of planets in the millions of universes to get the whole process moving again.
We'll monitor, watch, be on our guard.
I wish we could set off the bomb, I said with deep sorrow. His death could never make up for the death and destruction he has caused, but it would sure help.
But the professor is right. He may be mad, but he's not stupid. If he did this all again, he would not use the fake religion ploy. He would do it in a more undetectable manner. Find another planet with a decent climate and resources of coal and set up another operation there. He would proceed slowly and carefully and untraceably. After all, he has all eternity to do it in. Ah, there they go.
A flicker of motion beside the Unaldec Novum sphere showed where the space marines were springing into action. They had practiced the operation countless times in order to speed it up and perfect it. They got the time down to 3 seconds, and that was all it took now. Two large marines slammed the heavy hydrogen bomb against the sphere where it stuck. Captain Gristle hit the activating switch, and then they all vanished as quickly as they had appeared. A view screen beside the professor lit up, and Burke's image appeared.
In the green, Professor. Monitoring apparatus engaged and auto switch operating.
Thank you. Very good.
Over and out.
His image twinkled and vanished, and Koipu sighed with relief.
A good technician, Burke. I'm glad he decided to accept a position with the Corps. Both of him. He helped me design the auto switch so that it is completely failsafe.
Am I missing something?
Angelina asked. Last night. I couldn't sleep and you were doing fine. I came here and found a very red-eyed Professor Koipu staring at the screen, worrying at the same worry that was worrying me. A what if?
Which what if?
What if a Slakey is still out there somewhere? What if he builds a big enough inter-universal transporter to grab and transport that Unaldec Novum sphere to another universe? The Slakies would get away and start the whole deadly cycle over again. Between us, we worked out a solution. We got a hydrogen bomb from stock, fixed it up with a molybind, a molecular binder that makes it part of the sphere.
And, Koipu said, it contains a detector. If the sphere does go somewhere, it gets there as a mushroom cloud. If that thing goes away, the bomb goes off.
But if he doesn't try to move the sphere, why then he is still very much alive in his multiple bodies?
Angelina asked with irresistible female logic.
What do we do to get rid of this possibly eternal threat?
The professor and I sighed a duet of sighs.
We have experts working on other possibilities, I said. We have prepared our dilemma as an abstract problem that will be presented on all of the tests given in every philosophy department in every university in the galaxy. Someone, somewhere, may come up with the answer. Meanwhile, all we can do is watch.
Forever. Some legacy for our grandchildren. And theirs until the nth generation.
It was all too depressing to think of, and I changed the subject.
At least we have done something for Slakey's victims. The women from Purgatory. The ones who didn't need hospitalization, that is, have all gone to the planets of their choice, with lifetime pensions, mostly paid for by the seizure of Slakey's various properties. The same thing has been done for the miners, with the exception of one. Bubo is on the way to a hospital for the criminally insane to see if he might be cured.
What about those poor creatures in hell?
Angelina asked.
Can't anything be done for them?
A lot. Since they can't leave hell, we will have to do the best we can for them there. Interstellar charities have already put up temporary and air-conditioned buildings for them. Volunteers are giving them medical treatment, meals, outdoor barbecues, booze, counseling, that sort of thing. Since they can never leave hell, permanent provision must be made for them. They should be self-supporting soon.
Angelina's eyebrows rose at that.
Self-supporting in hell?
There is no accounting for taste, I said. A firm named Holidays in Hell has already been formed, and the first tourists are happily on their way. They photograph the natives, for a fee. Grill steaks on the lava, shudder when the gravity waves grab them, generally have a frightening but safe time.
Outrageous. I hope that old red devil Slakey shoots and eats them.
Alas, that is not possible now. Before we got there, the locals grew tired of being shot at and, well, sort of had him for dinner.
Wonderful. They can cook up all the rest of the Slakies, as far as I'm concerned. That would be a good solution. Which reminds me, a question or two, Professor, something that has been bothering me for a long time. Why so many Slakies, and how did he do it?
As usual, Khoipu had all the answers.
The answer to your first question is obvious. Who else could he trust? He wanted to keep eternal life for himself, so he went into partnership with himself to set up the operation. As to how he duplicated himself, I discovered that by accident. You will remember that we obtained the frequency settings from one of their machines for many other universes. That is how I found you on Glass and brought you back. When I have had the time, I have been investigating some of the other universes. Some of them are rather nasty. To keep under budget and not lose too many machines, I constructed an armor-plated recorder that I sent through to measure temperature, gravity, density, air pressure and contents, the usual things. I was greatly surprised when it returned from Gemelli, which I named this universe for obvious reasons, with a replica of itself. A little bit of research showed me that all of the radiation frequencies are doubled there. So matter from our universe is doubled as well when it returns here. Interesting phenomenon. So every time Slakey needed reinforcements, he popped in and out of Gemelli. You know that you are the second person to ask me that question today.
Who was the other?
Me,
Sybil said, walking in through the door and smiling happily.
Mr. and Mrs. Degrees, I would very much like to call you Mom and Dad. I can conceal it no longer. I am madly in love with your son and wish to marry him. Which one?
Angelina said.
Both of them,
Sybil said, walking in through the door again. The same words were spoken by both Sybils at the same time. I looked from one to the other, and for the first time in my life was at a loss for words. Angelina wasn't.
You have duplicated yourself. You are now two Sybils. Of course, I had no choice,
she said with impeccable female logic.
I was in love with your sons, and love can always find a way. Have you broken the good news to them yet? Not yet,
the Sybils said in unison.
But I know they love me. Women can tell just as much as I love them. But they are both too noble, honest, brave, and irreverent to ask for my hand, because it would mean the other one losing out. That problem has now been solved. Indeed it has,
Angelina said firmly, with the instant decision women make in matters of the heart.
And what do you say, Jim?
I say it is up to the boys to decide. She nodded agreement.
They should be here soon,
the doubled voice said.
I sent a message before I came.
James and Bolivar came in at that moment and did the best double act of double takes I had ever seen in my life. Before they could speak, each Sybil stepped forward and seized a twin and kissed him with passion. The response, I could tell, was equally passionate.
I love you,
Sybil breathed.
From the bottom of my heart, with all the depth of my being, do you love me?
That, as you might very well realize, was that. Angelina and I, smiling happily, joined hands and turned our backs on the embracing couples, sat and began to discuss their wedding plans. It would be the grandest social occasion the Special Corps Prime Base had ever seen. I snapped my fingers at the Robar, which produced a chilled bottle of sparkling wine, opened it dexterously with its two right hands, poured and passed us brimming glasses. We clinked and drank. A toast, I said. Can you think of one?
Of course, to the future newlyweds, and may their lives be filled with happiness.
Like ours, I said.
Of course.
We kissed and drank the toast. Over Angelina's shoulder I could see the screen with the image of that monstrous black sphere. I turned my back on it, not wanting to spoil this memorable day. Still, I couldn't stop thinking about it. Neither could Angelina.
Do we have enough money in the bank to buy a cyclotron?
She asked. I nodded. We could even afford a coal mine as well. Why do you ask?
I was just thinking. What a wonderful and unusual wedding present we could give the newlyweds.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Stainless Steel Rat Goes to Hell by Harry Harrison. Copyright 1996 by Harry Harrison. Performed by Phil Giganti. Directed by Natalie Ross.
Performance copyright 2011 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved.
For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.